Hello.
Hello, everyone. My name is Orville McDonald. I'd like to welcome all of you to What's New in Visual Studio 2012. As you can imagine, this is a very big product, lots of cool features in it. I'm actually really excited about it. Unfortunately, in 75 minutes, it's just not enough time to go through every single feature. So if I do not touch on your favorite feature, don't feel neglected. It's not intentional. I'm just trying to cover as many things as possible. So let's actually jump straight into it. So why build Visual Studio 2012? Wasn't Visual Studio 2010 already an awesome product? Well, the thing about it is that we're seeing that development is changing, right? And when we built 2012, one thing I want everybody to walk away with when this talk is finished is that we really designed it for kind of this new class of modern consumer and business applications. We also want to simplify the development process, right? Make you a lot more productive and make you do cooler things a lot faster. And also we realized that all of you tend to work in teams, right? So how can we make team collaboration a lot easier? So kind of keeping this in mind, we see some trends when we start thinking about development. First off, how many of you have a smartphone in your pocket? Okay, almost the entire room, right? Nowadays, we're always connected. We have these data plans. We have tablets. We have cell phones. Only a few years ago, people used to talk about, oh, I'm offline. Well, people don't talk about being offline anymore. I know as we were flying over to TechEd, some of my coworkers were on planes, and they were still connected, and we were discussing things as they were traveling. The other aspect of it is that now that we see people doing a lot more tasks on their cell phones, right, it's now a new form factor. The traditional keyboard, you know, external monitor, that's just too bulky to carry around. But with this smaller form factor, also requires a new type of user interface. So we're seeing a lot more touch. And as people are going through and they're having these connected experiences on these portable devices, using touch, they want to bring that into the workplace. So instead of before where everyone just had a standard issue laptop or a standard issue desktop, people are now asking, can you connect my tablet to the network? How can I access my email and SharePoint via my cell phone? So we're seeing this consumerization of IT that all of you are familiar with. And when we look across these three trends, we really see that as an underpinning, there's really two big things that are holding it together. First off is cloud services. For those of you who were in Satya's keynote earlier today, you saw a lot of Windows Azure. Because what we end up seeing is that by having connected devices with cloud services, you could have a standard business logic backend that you could then interface through multiple interfaces. The other thing that happens when everyone's always connected is that life becomes a lot more social. And when we talk about social, we're not talking about sending tweets or giving status updates to Facebook. And I hope all of you are tweeting about the session and you're only saying good things, hopefully. But there's another aspect to it as well, which is the team collaboration, right? And how can teams be more productive as they work together? So when we take a look at all these trends and what's underpinning them, that was really the logic behind Visual Studio 2012, right? And we really think of it as the best way to turn ideas into exceptional applications. So over the next 75 minutes, I'm hoping that you will walk away and you'll say, you know what? Visual Studio 2012 is the way to go. And I should probably start off by asking, how many of you have already installed the Visual Studio 2012 release candidate? Okay, good. We're seeing some hands up. How about Visual Studio 11 developer preview? Okay, a few more. How many of you are on Visual Studio 2010? Okay, a lot of people. How about 2008? Okay, there's a few. Earlier versions? Okay, a few people. All right, for those of you on the earlier versions, I tell you, you're gonna walk away and be like, you know, I need to get up with the modern stuff. It's awesome stuff. So let's start off by talking about the Visual Studio family, right? When we talk about Visual Studio, what does this mean? Is this just the IDE that sits on my desktop? Well, actually, it's a lot more than that. At the very core of the Visual Studio family is Team Foundation Server, right? This is a great way for you to collaborate, whether it's source control, whether it's tracking tasks. And you may have also heard earlier today when Scott was talking during the keynote that Team Foundation Service is now available without an invite code. How many of you have tried Team Foundation Service, out of curiosity? Okay, this is good. There's still a few people, even though you need the invitation code. Well, for those of you who do not have the invitation code, all you need to do is go to tfspreview.com and sign up for Team Foundation Service. It is an awesome product. You're able to access it online, and it helps you stay connected always. With Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service at its core, right, we have three key SKUs that you would interface with when you're writing your code, whether that's Professional, Premium, or Ultimate. All of them serve various purposes. When you think of, for example, using Professional, kind of the easiest way to do cross-platform development within Visual Studio. With Premium, you now get more agile tooling, and you're better able to work with your team. And then as you move on to Ultimate, it's the nonstop shop for all things great in development. And I don't just say that as hyperbole because I'm excited about the product, but it includes great things from architecture tools, testing tools, cross-platform tools, and I'll actually be showing a lot of Ultimate today in today's session, and there'll be a lot more. If you take a look in your schedules, you see some application lifecycle management with Visual Studio. I highly advise that you check those out as well. So let's think about the developer experience, right? So I talked a bit about kind of why we created Visual Studio 2012, what's some of the goodness in it, and you may be wondering, okay, that's great, but what's in it for me? Well, this is where we get into the developer experience. The first thing we try to do is really reduce the number of steps that it takes to do anything. And I'll showcase some of those, whether it's trying to find different pieces of code, whether it's reducing the number of toolbar options, so that way only the most important things are front and center when you're writing your code. And the other thing is really around kind of simplification, right? How do we simplify things? How do we create the right code abstractions and the right code templates to get you up and going quickly? And then also usability, right? In usability, we did a lot of things to improve the performance. We actually are pretty excited about that. And also, well, actually, I have another tidbit, but I'll save it to when we get into our first demo. So let's get into actually building something with Visual Studio. How many people in the room are developers? OK, most of the room. How about other roles? OK, a few other people as well. All right, so we're going to actually jump into some development. So let's start off with building for Windows. All right. Visual Studio 2012 will be the best way to develop applications on Windows. As many of you have probably already seen, with Windows 8 soon about to come out, there's actually a new programming style called Metro Style. And Visual Studio 2012 will be the only way to develop Metro Style applications. But not only does it develop Metro Style applications, but you'll be able to continue developing your standard Windows 7 and earlier versions as well. We've added enhanced improvements for graphics intensive work. So if you're doing a lot of things with DirectX, maybe you're doing simulations, maybe you're developing games, we have a lot of great stuff in there. And then also for your Windows drivers. So let's start off and let's talk about asynchronous programming, right? So how many of you have been in a situation, and this is a true story, this happened to me when I used to work in Windows Live, where there's this big performance issue, right? Something's happening, it's really slow, so the team gets motivated. We're going to crack this problem. So you go heads down, you're searching, you're profiling, you're doing your IntelliTraces, and then all of a sudden you find the issue, right? Everybody starts high-fiving each other, they're really excited, but then reality sets in. And the first thing you realize is that we actually have to go and fix this problem. And historically, and actually, how many people have been in this situation? How many people know what I'm talking about right now? And don't be shy, you know, it happens to all of us, okay. So you go through, you find the problem, and then you realize you actually have to fix it. And often fixing the problem requires a complete re-architecture of your code, right? And re-architecting your code then gives you a big regression hit. And all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I'm in this big bind, do we really want to fix it, or do we just punt on it? Well, actually new in the .NET Framework 4.5, we have this asynchronous functionality, where with the use of two keywords, await and async, you could take synchronous style programming and actually make your program asynchronous. And actually, to show this off, we're going to start off with our very first demo. So switch machines. So the first thing I want everybody to notice up on the screen is that this is Visual Studio 2012, but I actually have a Visual Studio 2010 project up there. It's using .NET Framework 4.0. And for those of you who may have remembered when you upgraded to Visual Studio 2010, there were issues that when you opened up the project in Visual Studio 2010, it automatically upgraded the project. And then once it was upgraded, you actually couldn't turn back. And this presented a lot of problems for people who want to experiment. So we've actually fixed that in Visual Studio 2012, and we now support round tripping. So I could actually go from .NET Framework 4 to .NET Framework 4.5 as I please. In this case, I'm going to go and I'm going to switch it to 4.5. I see I get a warning asking me if this is really what I want to do, and it is. I'll go through, I'll make a few changes to recognize .NET Framework 4.5. Now let's start the application. This application is your basic WinForms type of app. It's a customer support app, so I'll go through. I'm going to search on a customer. Comes up here. I have a little notepad area where I could go and type in. Now I want to pull up some customer information. So I click on the button, try to move this around. It's not moving. Go to click. Turns out my application's hanging. Okay, so now my data has finally come up. This isn't good. I don't want my application to hang. So let's go and fix this problem. So I'm going to go and I'm going to close my application. And I know that my code actually exists in a certain method called buttonGetPermissionsClick. Historically, if you had a big project, you had to go and you had to click around and find out where exactly this method was. Well, now new in Visual Studio 2012, we have this handy search functionality. So I'll just go and enter the name of my method. And you will notice below that it actually brings me directly to the method that I want. Once again, improving the developer experience and making things a lot simpler. You see that it brought me directly to the method that I want to update. So in order to take advantage of this new asynchronous functionality, I need to add a new namespace. Oops. Or actually, more accurately, I need to add the task parallel library, which is in task threading. Ah, that's it. Thank you very much. I told you that coding was a social thing, so we're doing this together. And I have another lowercase there. Great. So now with the task parallel library added, I'm going to go through, I'm going to add some code. Sync. So I'm just going to add a web service call. Sorry, it's pretty dark on the stage, so it's kind of hard for me to see. There we go. There. So what I've done is, up above, I actually have this call where I make the query, and that's where things are hanging. So I actually want to change that, and I've added a new method down below called, where is it? There we go. GetDataAsync. So what I've done is pretty much taken my previous code, put it into its own method, and I end up calling this asynchronously. And the way that I do that is I take out this call here, add the async keyword. There's my method. And the first thing you'll notice is that actually I get the squiggly red line telling me that it's not recognizing it. And the reason why is I need to add the other keyword to my method, which is await. Oh, sorry, I put that in the reverse order. So let me fix that. Sync. Then down below. It's my await. There we go. It recognizes it. Simple change, right? Easy enough. Let's go run the application. I'm going to go through. I'm going to do a search. I see I have my notepad here. Let me type something. Let me look up the customer. I'm able to move my application around. I'm able to continue typing. So now you see that my application doesn't hang. And just like that, by adding two keywords, I now have made a synchronous application asynchronous. Isn't that some awesome stuff? Come on. Just wonderful. I love it. I love it. So let's come out of there. Let's go back into some slides. So once again, I showed you a few things, right? With search, I was able to show you how we've improved the developer experience by making it a lot easier and faster for you to find the code that you need to update. And with stuff like sync and async, you're now able to solve these hairy problems a lot faster than you're able to before. And don't worry, if you don't tell your manager about this functionality, you could claim credit for solving bugs that much faster. Highly advised. The other thing that I want to point out as far as Windows development goes is developing Metro-style applications. So many people hear about Metro style, and they think it's just a UI thing, right? Let's just throw a bunch of boxes and capital letters and graphics, and all of a sudden my app will look cool. It actually runs a lot deeper than that. Metro style is inspired by kind of the way we live. when you go to major cities, when you travel through airports, when you're on subway stations, you'll notice that the typography, the wording, the casing is often designed in a way that even if you're not a native speaker to the area that you're in, you're pretty easily able to figure out what's going on, get your information at a glance, and continue moving on with what you're trying to do. And Metro style carries a lot of that with you. The other thing with the Metro style design is that it's adaptable for different form factors. So you can see that we have desktops, but also laptops and tablets, right? And when you start thinking about the tablet experience, you know, you have very little real estate. So you don't have much room for a large keyboard, right? So how do you make it easy that you could hold the tablet, enter the information you need, and be very productive at the same time? So these things really influence the Metro style. To develop Metro style applications, as I said earlier, you'll need two things. You'll need Windows 8, because it's not supported in earlier versions of Windows, and you'll also need Visual Studio 2012. With both of those, you'll be able to develop Metro style apps. If you have a tablet, you could also do some tablet development there, but it's not necessarily needed because we have tools that will help you with that. The other thing, too, is how many people have actually used Blend before? Okay, cool, so there's quite a few people. For those of you who haven't used Blend, Blend's a great tool to help you designing your UIs when you're developing applications. And we now have Blend included with Visual Studio. We have Blend for Visual Studio 2012, and you could use that to upgrade your projects and do the fit and finish on the UI that you might not have been able to do as easily with Visual Studio. So kind of with that, let's jump into another demo. I'll switch machines here. So we'll bring it up. So earlier today, many of you may have remembered seeing a keynote from Scott and Jason where they used a message queue. So I don't expect everybody in here to use the message queue, so let me just put some test data in there. So while that's going, let me run my application. The first thing I want everyone to notice is that I actually have a simulator. So even if you do not have a tablet already, you could do tablet development using your simulator. The simulator uses a lot of the great functionality that you would have in a regular tablet, but it also includes some key things. So for example, right now we're in Orlando, but I might be developing a check-in application. And with that, I need to be in different locations. Well, we actually have support for that within the simulator, where you can set your location. So you can see that within my simulator, I have a few options. I can set my latitude and longitude, which is already set. But the other thing that's great is that I can set my altitude. So maybe I'm a mountain climber, and I want different functionality as I'm climbing up the mountain. Well, I could actually simulate that directly here through the simulator. I also have support for rotations, so I could turn my app, and my app will automatically update itself as it turns. Turn it back. For those of you who need touch, we also include touch support. So now you can see I have a little mouse as I roll over. Click on Africa. I could see some information there. Scroll back. So we include a lot of great functionality in the simulator, so that way you could develop Metro-style applications even if you don't have a tablet. When I looked at the app, it said Scott's message. However, I want to change the title of that. So I could do that within Visual Studio, but instead I'm going to do it in a different way. So the first thing I'm going to do, I have this items page. Right-click on it. I see that I have a few options. One of them is open in Blend. So I'm going to choose to do that. It's going to load the project right now. And the key thing to note is that when it loads, is that this is the exact same project that I also have open in Visual Studio. I can see that the title here is Scott Message. But I actually want to change that. I want to say, hello, TechEd. That through. I can see that saved there. Let me go and save my application. Now I'll go back to Visual Studio, go to the dropdown, and I see I have a few options, right? So before I ran my Metro style application in a simulator, but I may not always want to do it in a simulator. I could use a remote machine if I have a tablet. In this case, I actually want to run it on the local machine. So what this does is that when I run on the local machine, I can actually test it on the Win8 machine that I'm using. So I'll select that option, and you go and run the application. Comes up, and once now you see is a full Windows 8 Metro style app. You see that the title has changed. So that interaction with Blend, where I was able to update the file, save it, go back to Visual Studio, continue running my application, and we now see that it's updated. I am using over here a touch-enabled device, and one thing I noticed is that I need more messages in my queue. So let me go and pump a few more in. There we go. So we see that the messages are starting to come in. I have a touch-enabled laptop, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to click on USA. See that come in, and then I also have an option to take a photo. Give it permission to do so. So what I would normally do is take a picture of all of you, but it's a little too dark in here, so you're going to have to see me. I know some people are really great at taking photos of themselves with like their phones and stuff. I am not one of those people, so this is going to be a terrible photo, but never mind. So I'll go and click on that. Ooh, that was a really bad one. Unfortunately, this is being filmed, so people are going to see this for a very long time. So I click OK. I've now saved it, right? So the key thing to note is that here I am developing my application. I'm able to run it locally on the machine and take full advantage of the hardware capabilities of that machine when testing my application. Ooh, that's a really bad photo. I need to get off of that one. Let's go back. So I'm able to test out all that full functionality local on my machine. So I'll go back here and press stop. So you can see very easily how you could get up and running very quickly developing Windows 8 Metro-style applications. If you do not have the Windows 8 release preview installed on your machine, highly advise you go out and get it. It's a lot of fun. It's a great operating system with a lot of new improvements. When you combine that with Visual Studio 2012, you really open yourself up for the ability to create some really great applications. So let's go on to the next step, right? So we talked a lot about Windows, right? Many people do Windows development today. However, there's this continuous trend, not just to the web, but also to the cloud. And some of you may be thinking, you know, how do I take advantage of these opportunities? How do I take stuff that's local in my data centers, move them to the cloud where I could take advantage of the elastic capabilities, the management of servers, and all those other things so you could focus on your applications? Well, we include a lot of great stuff for that as well. Just last week, Thursday, we announced the release of the Windows Azure tools for Visual Studio. So you could go out and actually install those on your Visual Studio 2012 release preview or release candidate and start playing with them. The great thing that you get is not only the Windows Azure SDK, but you get support for ASP.NET MVC roles. So if you're developing web applications with MVC and ASP.NET, you could continue to do so with Azure. It also includes support for great things like caching. So if you have an application that, you know, you need more response, you don't want to be hammering the database all the time, you could take advantage of the web cache that's out there. It's integrated solution. So one of the great things with Visual Studio is that as you develop your cloud application, you could also plug it in with your phone app or your web app or your desktop client app and get all that covered in one solid solution. We've also included new functionality to help you with testing your apps from IntelliTrace and profiling. So that way, as you have issues up in the cloud, it's a lot easier to debug them. And all that's enabled through Visual Studio. So enough of the slideware. Let's jump back into our next demo. So the first thing I want to do, I have this very simple contact manager app. And actually, let me go and run that. So I'm just going to load it up in Internet Explorer. So you can see it's a very basic app. All it really does is keep track of my contacts. And I could have this hosted on a local server. But really what I want to do is I want to bring it to the cloud, right? So I may be here wondering, like, OK, what's involved? Do I need to re-architect my app? Is this going to be very complicated? Well, we're actually going to migrate this entire app, database, and web parts all up into Windows Azure live here. So let's hope that the demo gods are on my side today. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to open our web config. And I find my connection strings. So this string right here is what connects to my local SQL server. So you can see kind of the SQL client. And what I want to do is I actually want to change that to talk to SQL Azure. But even before I do that, I actually have a database that's running locally. And I want to move that one into the cloud. So I'll go through, I'll select my SQL database. I'm going to connect to my local server. So it's going through, it's querying my database. And this is actually a very basic tool. I don't know how many of you have used CodePlex, and I'll actually bring that up. But I'm just taking advantage of the SQL Azure Migration Wizard off of CodePlex. So later on, if you want to go through and you want to try this out with your own applications, the code is freely available. Just go to CodePlex, and you could find it there. And there's a lot of other goodies on CodePlex as well, so I highly advise you go and check it out. So I see my Contact Manager DB. That's the one I want to export to Azure. So I'm going to go through. See, I have my tables. And it's very simple. It's just a wizard. I'm going to generate a SQL script. And many of you may be wondering, why am I using this tool versus just using it some other way? Well, often what happens is that when you want to move your data up, it copies the schema, but it doesn't always bring over the data. With this migration wizard, it enables me to both copy the schema and bulk copy my data as well. So this looks good. Next thing I want to do is actually contact my server instance. So let me grab the server name. There we go. So just copy that server, go to my migration wizard. Lays out all the information that I need right here, so it's pretty easy to find. And I gotta say, there's nothing like going in and entering credentials in front of a whole bunch of developers who are probably gonna go and hack my account after this. But I'm sure all of you are friendly. You wouldn't do that to me. People probably hammering the server right now as we speak. So it's going through, it's connecting up. I see I have a little shell of a database that I created in advance to save some time. So click Next. So now it's just going over the wire. You're seeing how fast this is operating. It's created the tables for me, and now it's going to bulk upload my data. So this is one step that we do in order to move the data from my local instance up into the cloud. So while that's happening, we're actually going to move over. And we're going to go back here. And to save time, so you guys don't have to see me do a lot of typing, I've actually already included the connection string. So let's go and comment out my local one. And let's now take advantage of the SQL Azure connection string that I have in here. The one thing I want to highlight is if you take a look, it's pretty much your standard connection string. There's nothing too different than what you would normally do for SQL Server. So it's pretty easy to get up and going. So it's going through and it's doing a copy. It's taking a little while. But what I'm going to do in the meantime is I'm actually going to go and run this application. Okay. And you see the data coming up. So just like that, I now have my local website. And what I'm doing is I'm actually taking advantage of data that sits up in the cloud with SQL Azure, right? So you've seen live, just in a few minutes, I was able to take my data, bulk upload it to SQL Azure. So that part's fine. But the next thing now is I actually want to move this website into the cloud. So you can see here I have your standard ASP.NET project. And my next step is to make it a Windows Azure project. So I right-click on the project. I go through. I see I have various options. But one of them is actually to add a Windows Azure Cloud Service project. So I'm going to go and do that. And when I do that, what it does to my solution is that it adds a new project. So it goes through, it adds a role for me. And this role is a web role. So this now recognizes that when it goes to Azure, these are the different properties that it needs to run under. With that included, my next step is to actually go and publish. Click Publish to Azure. I already have a subscription. If you did not have a subscription already, we have some new functionality that we've included in our June release, which is sign in to download credentials. So what you would do is that before, when you were trying to move your projects into the cloud, you would have to spend time going between the portal and Visual Studio, and you'd be doing a lot of back and forth. You don't have to do that anymore. You could actually just sign in, download your credentials, save them locally on your machine, and then just import them, and then from there, just continue on deploying your application. Click Next. I can see I have various things I could change. I could enable remote desktop, for example. But what I'm going to do here, I'm actually going to create a new cloud service. I'm going to call this TechEd NA 2012. Select my region. My region's already selected as part of importing my credentials. Click OK. It's going to go and configure my project. Now I'm going to say publish. And what it's going to do now is it's actually going to go and handle all the publishing work for me. So while that's going, what I've done in advance is I've already deployed a similar type of application, just in the interest of time. So you can see there, there's my Azure demo. And just like that, in a few simple steps, I was able to take an existing application, take my local data, bulk copy that into the cloud, add a cloud service project to my web application, and then just publish the whole thing to the cloud. So you can see live, in a matter of minutes, you're able to take your existing web app, take it to Azure. Isn't that great stuff? Come on. Wow, this is good stuff. You get in there. Push that through, and you can see that the instance I'm putting is going up. So now let's talk a little bit about HTML5, right? Many of you may be wondering, how does HTML5 plug into the type of development work that you're doing? You know, we have ASP.NET, for example. You know, does that mean that we're no longer interested in .NET and it's only HTML5? Well, that's the furthest thing from the truth, right? We realize that developers use different technologies when writing their applications. Some people may be using the .NET framework. Some people might be writing code natively with C++, writing directly down to the metal. Other people are using web technologies like HTML5 and CSS3. Well, within Visual Studio, we want to be able to support you to do the type of development you want to do. And as a result, we support all three technologies. As far as web development goes, you could choose between ASP.NET or using HTML5. You could use it to create your Windows application. So for example, the three types of technologies I mentioned before, you could use for writing Metro-style applications. You should also note that if you're writing a Metro-style application with HTML5, right, that doesn't necessarily mean that you take your web application that you're hosting and then just copy that down to Windows and it will run automatically, because Windows has different types of functionality than your standard web browser would. So there's different things that are different. But if you know how to write HTML5 code and you know how to write JavaScript code, that will work there as well. The other thing to note, too, is Internet Explorer 10 will have even more improvements and enhancements for supporting HTML. So as you develop your HTML applications, you could actually then take them, run them on your preferred web server, and have them render cleanly within Internet Explorer. The other thing, too, is that as far as kind of editing and configuring and setting up your web projects, we have enhanced improvements for debugging and profiling your code within Visual Studio. So that way you can go, you can find the type of issues that you're running into, and solve them very quickly. And then for those of you who are writing ASP.NET code, and you're wondering, do I write ASP.NET? Do I write HTML5? Well, your ASP.NET code with .NET Framework 4.5 will actually render HTML5 code. So as you write your application, and then you're seeing the markup as it goes into the browser, is HTML5 code. Not only that, but within your ASP.NET project, you could embed certain things like the video tag. So you could take full advantage of those type of capabilities that HTML5 includes, all within Visual Studio. The other thing, kind of continuing on with like HTML5 support within ASP.NET, is that, as I mentioned at the very beginning, one of the things we see is a lot of mobility and being connected while mobile. So we've included enhanced support for that as well. So for example, when you go and you open Visual Studio 2012 and you take a look at your ASP.NET projects, one of the types that is supported is actually the ability to create mobile websites. And Scott Guthrie has showed some of this during the keynote. So that way, depending on whether you're developing a regular desktop browser app or whether you're developing a mobile browser app, you have the templates that you need all within Visual Studio direct from File New. So you can get up and running very quickly. But not only do we include the templates, but we include the type of libraries that you need to create these rich user experiences right out the gate. So for example, we include support for jQuery Mobile. So if you're a jQuery developer, you actually have that functionality and you could use it. We also include it directly within the templates themselves. So you could just go take the templates and start riffing on them and find the type of stuff that you want to do. Also, with some of the enhancements that we included in CSS, it makes it a lot easier to update your themes. So for example, we've included IntelliSense. So if you want to leverage the great functionality of IntelliSense within your CSS, you can. Sometimes you're writing it, you forget, like, oh, you know, what's the next thing I add? What's the method on an object? Well, that's included for you. We've also included enhanced controls. We're developing controls, contributing them to the community, making them available to others, so that way you could get these rich, powerful applications up and going. And the other thing I want to add is that we really have a comprehensive web platform, right? So if you want to develop applications, you could start off with Visual Studio. But the other thing, too, is that you could download the web platform installer. And the great thing with the web platform installer is that it gives you access to all types of databases, web frameworks, web servers. So if you work in a heterogeneous environment where you use more than just the Microsoft technologies, you actually have access to those things within your tooling. It also includes support for other types of languages. So for example, if you're a Python developer, within WebPI, you could actually install Django and Python, and you could do your testing within Visual Studio. That functionality I described there is actually more of a Visual Studio 2010 thing. We're still in the RC for Visual Studio 2012. But you can naturally see that a lot of these things will start moving forward. So the key thing to note is that really what we're doing is we want to make it really easy. We want to simplify the development experience for your web development, regardless of what technologies you decide to use. Also kind of going through with the HTML and CSS tooling is that we have other things like smart editing. So one thing you'll see in the screenshot is that somebody's writing some CSS, and you want to go through and you want to add some colors, right? And you're sitting there, and you're trying to remember what that RGB code is, and it's really difficult to figure out what it is. Well, with IntelliSense, we've also enhanced it, not just to give you a list of, like, text options to figure out, like, oh, I want this property or this other property, but we also include a drop-down color wheel. So you could go through and you could select the exact type of colors that you want. Once again, really simplifying the process of your web development. The other thing, as far as kind of debugging and profiling your applications, is often we develop these web applications and we see that something's not rendering quite the way we want it to. It looks a little funny. We have a hard time finding the issue. And you're sitting there and you're trying to probe and probe and you're not sure like what CSS layer is interacting with another CSS layer. Well, we actually have a DOM Explorer built within Visual Studio, which will help you find kind of where your core problems are. Kind of with that, we also include a JavaScript console so you could see what your JavaScript is doing. Once again, all things that help you really reduce the amount of time that you spend trying to find issues while developing web applications with Visual Studio. And with that functionality, you can actually explore what's happening on your page and on your server at the exact same time, right? So that helps you find your issues that much faster, right? And being able to set the breakpoints and correspond them with your client so that way you get a complete end-to-end view of what your application's doing as far as kind of finding the issues and really debugging them a lot faster and cleanly. So let's go into another development. Or another demo. And in this case, let me switch over. So we're going to go back to our handy Visual Studio. I don't want that one. This one here. So let's go and run this application. But before I do, the first thing I want to point out is that many of you run web applications that need to render on various browsers. So the way you go about doing this today is that you install Firefox, you install Chrome, you install Internet Explorer, and then you have this test hit because you run through your 100-plus test cases on Internet Explorer, you find your problem, you switch over to Chrome, do the exact same thing again, go over to Firefox, do the exact same thing again, and it starts to get pretty tedious, especially with a lot of the context switching. Well, what we've done is within Visual Studio, you can see from this drop-down menu that I could actually go and select the browser that I want directly within Visual Studio. So I could say that instead of running my application in Internet Explorer, I could go and run it in Firefox. And then when I press F5, it will actually bring up my web app within Firefox, and then I could go from there and figure out what the issues are. In this case, I'm actually going to stick with Internet Explorer. So I'll go and run my application. So it's a Fabricam Fiber customer support application, pretty simple enough. Right now we're looking at the login page. And the first thing I want to ask is, anybody notice a problem with this page? Exactly, it is not secure because I'm seeing Drew Robbins logged in on a login page, which doesn't quite make sense to me since we're not logged in. So let's see if we can figure out what's going on. So within Internet Explorer, it already includes some great debugging tools. So I'll go through here. We see that we have these F12 developer tools. So I'll select that option. At the very bottom, I see I could take a look at my HTML. I could take a look at CSS. I could look at the scripts. There's a lot of things that I could do. In this case, I want to figure out where Drew Robbins is actually coming from. So I go through there. I click my options. And you'll notice that as I scroll over the page, you're seeing different elements highlighted. In this case, I'll click on Drew Robbins, and it will actually show me how it's styled. So on the one hand, I got my HTML, but on the other, I see my CSS styling. So that's pretty cool for figuring out my formatting. But what I would really love to do is take this functionality and drill all the way into my code to see what the issue is. Only problem is that it's running in Internet Explorer, and I don't have the debugging functionality within Internet Explorer. Wouldn't it be pretty awesome if I could see this in Visual Studio? Well, it actually turns out I can. Because within Visual Studio, I showed you the list of different browsers that I could browse through. The other option I also have is the ability to use my Page Inspector. So I'll select that option. And what Page Inspector does is it enables me to run my application like it's running in a browser, except it's happening within Visual Studio. And because it's happening within Visual Studio, I get to do a lot more powerful things that I was unable to do in just a browser alone. So with it in Page Inspector, let's give it a run. So I set my application, and you'll notice that a Page Inspector window is starting to come up. What that's doing is it's actually rendering my application, so it's actually a full running website, but it's happening within Visual Studio. I'll expand it a bit more so everyone can see it. Scroll down. You can see Drew Robbins is still logged in. It's not necessarily what I want. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to inspect the page the same way that I would if I was in Internet Explorer using the F12 developer tools. Click my inspect. I scroll over. I see that I have the exact same options as before. But now you're actually seeing something magical happen. And what the magic is that you're actually seeing the profile code for the different elements that are being rendered showing up within Visual Studio. So what that now means, if I select Drew Robbins, is that it's actually going to bring me to the exact code that is rendering this. Through, and I look at my profile. Actually, too many windows open. I lost my context for a second. Go back. There we go. Back to my Page Inspector. So I can see I have the Drew Robbins listed out there. I'll double click on that. Shows up there. And I can see that's the code that I actually want to change. So if I scroll back here, and voila, there's my issue. Drew Robbins' name is actually hard-coded directly into the site. And now I think back at it, I know exactly what went wrong. When we were developing this site, we actually just wanted to put a test name in there while we were still wiring it up. So we just included it. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to make a change. Say at user. Once again, IntelliSense is kicking in. So that solves part of the problem. So now I'm able to go and say, OK, let's no longer hard code Drew's name in there. Let's just bring it up as we need it. The other thing that's missing here is that the user's not authenticated, right? So we want to make that change as well. So let's go up. And once again, I'll just add some authentication code. And we'll just encapsulate all of that right here. Go through and save the application. And the one thing I want everyone to note is that we're still running this application. It hasn't stopped. It's still up in the page inspector, right? I was updating my code right here. I'm going to go back to this page. Let me pin it. And you see that I get a warning message, right? The warning message is, my file's been updated, right? There's changes that need to be recognized. Let's go and recognize them. So I'll go through and I'll just reload the page. And it is still showing up. No problem. So the name is fixed. Good call. So I fixed part of the problem, but I haven't fixed the entire thing. So let's go back and figure out what was done incorrectly. So I have that encapsulated there. So I have the closing bracket right there. Oh, which part? To the right? Okay. Ah, okay. Good catch. Remember what I said before, you know, coding is now a social experience. So they're all doing that together. Make sure I properly captured that. Style. Okay. Save that. Run it again. Ah, thank you. Yep, that is the problem. Tell you, it is really hard to see up here. Okay. At if. There we go. Third time is a charm. Bingo, it works. And actually, applause to everyone. This was team coding right here. This is good stuff. So you can see that kind of within my browser, I was able to identify issues, right? Find out what's going on. And it was so simple that even for those of you who had never seen this code before, we're able to figure out some of the things that were going on, and we were able to debug this kind of together. So you can see some of the cool functionality that happens there. So now that we've fixed our application, let's switch out of here. Let's go into Chrome. Run the app. See, there's a reason why we use Internet Explorer. It's just a faster browser. So now it's up in Chrome. We can see that our application's here. Let me go and log in. Ken Sanchez is the right user. Click on that. It will log in. And it brings me all my information, right? So that's some great stuff, right? You can see how with Visual Studio 2010, I was able to find an issue in my code, debug it, make the updates, deploy it, and then test it again in another browser. So now for some engineering trends, right? So we talked a lot about kind of like changes in the development experience and how we're making things better. Well, within our application lifecycle management tools, we added a lot of functionality to help teams be more agile. So that way, kind of as you work in teams, it's easier to collaborate on source control, project tasks. And we've also done a lot of great stuff to help developers and operations teams work more effectively together. And that was some of the stuff that Jason Zander showed earlier today. I am not going to go through a lot of this stuff, but there are some great sessions. So when you think of like the continuous value of delivery, right, and this whole notion of like defining your projects, creating them, developing them, and then once developed, deploying them into production, ALM functionality, or application lifecycle management within Visual Studio, helps you a lot with that. Brian Keller is giving some great talks later today. At the end of my slides, you'll see a list of sessions. I highly advise you go and check out some of those. Unfortunately, there's not enough time to cover a lot of that functionality today. The other thing to note, too, is that we understand that you all work in heterogeneous environments. So in addition to using Visual Studio, you could also bring some of your developer tools with you. And with things like Team Explorer Everywhere, you could actually plug in or have your plugin with Eclipse. So that way you could use that functionality with Team Foundation Service. So that way you could use whatever you need to get out of there while taking advantage of all the strong benefits that you get with Visual Studio. So to wrap up, we started off by talking about three things. We said we were going to touch on how modern apps have changed for both consumers and business, how we simplify the development experience to make it easier for developers everywhere, and also how teams can collaborate. And you can see that with Visual Studio 2012, we literally just skimmed the surface on this stuff. But there's a lot of great functionality. I highly recommend that you check out a lot of the other DevTrack sessions to dig a lot deeper into this. And when we think about some of the related content, a few things I want to call out. One of them is Dev 319. It's a Visual Studio tips and tricks session. So you'll be able to go there and learn how you can get a lot more out of Visual Studio while you use it. If you like stuff like the async and await functionality that we added to the .NET framework, we'll have a session on that. And we talked a lot about application lifecycle management, but we didn't really go into it. So we have the Dev 340 talk. I know that this is a big building. It takes a lot of time to walk across. So I'm going to be available for a few more minutes after this session to answer any questions that you have. But you could also find me later at the Visual Studio booth at 6 o'clock. I'll be there for a chalk talk from 6 to 7, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you very much for spending this time with me, and I hope you get the best out of Visual Studio 2012. You have to fill out your evals. Very important.